This is The Women of Letters, a podcast dedicated to the TV show Supernatural and everything fandom. Welcome to the first Women of Letters podcast of season 11. Woo! Yay! Jules from the Super Wiki and me, I'm Amy from Sweet on Dean. We're going to talk about Out of the Darkness into the Fire today. What did you think, Jules?
Oh, well, I should say it first. After our last podcast, our pre-season 11 podcast, we'd gone, oh, look, it's sort of, we know the first two episodes are sort of going to be a two-parter, so, you know, why don't we wait until after that? And Amy's going to be down here at my place and after the second episode, so we thought we can have a few cocktails and podcasts. And then the minute I'd finished watching the episode,
all that went out the window.
Key smash, Amy, need to podcast immediately.
Was. I was like, okay. That's really funny. That was
really
funny.
I need to talk about this at excruciating length.
I know. It was kind of like that, though. I was like, I got on because, like, unlike you, who happened to be at home that day, I was at work all day, and of course I live in Australia, like Jules does, so it happens, I think, about midday on our coast, from the East Coast screening.
Yeah.
And so, like, I can't, you know, you can't look at your phone, you can't do anything. And all I can think about is, how quickly can I get out of here to watch the show today? And I was, like, trying to make an exit about 4:45 and thinking, I can probably get out now. And I'm standing there and someone kept talking to me. I got all my stuff on my shoulder. And I suddenly was like, I said, do we have to talk about this right now? Or can we talk about this in the morning? And she's like, oh my God, your show's on. I'm so sorry. Go, go, go. I'm like, oh, thank God. And I'm like running out the door. So it can be quite torturous having to get through a work day knowing that just a regular Supernatural episode, just the premiere season, the premiere episode of the season.
I'll actually be on the road next Thursday, next week, so I won't get to see it until the evening. So,
welcome to my world.
In the same boat. But I loved it.
Me too.
It took me back. It reminded me in a way of, not that, and we were just having a conversation offline a little bit about season openers, and Supernatural's always been, it's been pretty good about having season arcs. So, you know, Kripke learned from the X-Files, and, you know, basically the big bad gets killed at the end of the season, or they wrap up an arc and a new one starts. And so there's always lots to set up in the opener for the themes and the story threads for the season. But some seasons more than others, and season four opener, which is my favourite of all times, does that brilliantly with the various different stories. And I thought this one as well planted so many seeds that, you know, some of which you think will probably go the whole season, or some of them obviously will wrap up halfway through. It's hard to, you know, there's probably ones we haven't even noticed yet. So a lot of it really felt like setting up a season. There was obviously a story there, but there was a lot, and I think, you know, the reason I was so anxious to podcast about it was because, you know, I think perfectly what you want a season opener to do is have everyone speculating about what's going to happen. There be things that are making you think, what does that mean? What could that be? Do, you know, where does that come from? Is it this? Is it that? You know, and that's what fandom's been doing. So
absolutely. I think
that's mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished. That was absolutely what this one did. It was you got to the end of it kind of in such a it's almost like you rode along with the Winchesters in this kind of slightly disorientated state of not knowing what was really happening and what it all meant. And you kind of, I got to the end, oh my God, like I threw my arms up in the air and gasped at the end. I couldn't believe it. I never saw that coming. But I got to the end going, oh my God, you know, like it launched so many questions, but not in such a way like, say, Lost. Launched all these questions and never answered anything, but it launched all these questions, and I got to the end thinking, wow, there's so many directions this could go, and it got my brain thinking, and I just wanted to talk about it, and everybody was starting to theorize about all the different little arcs that possibly could happen and what this meant and what that meant, and I was the same. I thought, this is exactly what you want from a season premiere, because I can't wait for the next episode, especially knowing that it's going to flow straight on from what we've just done. And so, you know, hoping that at least some of those questions will start to be tapped into. And I just can't wait, because I just really want to know where all this is going. And that's all just from one episode. I think they did an amazing job of setting it up.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, no, I agree. So why don't we start at the beginning?
Start at the beginning. Start at the road so far.
Yes.
I always get really excited. I think I tweeted out, what song's going to be on the road so far, I wonder?
Well, there's two things we can look forward to for every season. There's the road so far and what song that's going to be. And, of course, there's the new title card for the season.
Yeah, that's right. So that was exciting as well. And I love the song that they used, which is Run Through the Jungle, which is Creedence. Isn't it Creedence Clearwater?
Yes.
And I thought that was a great song. I was kind of a little, I was like, hey, I'm a bit surprised I haven't used this one before. I thought it fitted really, really, really well. And it was a great road so far. And then really beautiful opening titles with the smoke and this kind of, you know, almost a little understated, I thought.
Yeah, well, it certainly had, I mean, part of it had, I think, a season one vibe about it visually, in terms of the simplicity of it.
Yeah.
And I think, and also, again, I didn't notice, but it was pointed out to me, you can faintly see 11 in the background.
I didn't notice that either. I read that somewhere, somebody tweeted that out, and I was like, really? I didn't notice.
Yeah, so the last couple of frames have got... have got that in the background. So.
Yeah, that's super cool. Yeah, then they've not done that before, have they?
Mm.
No.
No, they haven't. And so, yeah, no, I thought it had a really good vibe about it in that way. And, of course, the darkness sort of swirling around. So
yeah. Yeah, really. It's really pretty. It's got all little particles coming out in it. But in a real simplicity, but, like, very cool. I like that. And it's always super exciting. I mean... Do any other fandoms get really, really exciting about the new opening titles?
Well, not a lot of shows have to.
No, every single season we go, woohoo!
It's always something we think about.
Because I think it was Gift within about 22 seconds, wasn't it? Which is super awesome. Yeah, so I love that. And then picking up where we left off, which I always really... dig it when we do that, because it's almost like the last 5 months never happened. Woohoo! The dark times of hiatus never happened. And I really enjoy picking up the story. I mean, you know, there was obviously a few hours. I don't really know. I mean, Dean said later on, I killed Death a couple of hours ago. So,
yeah,
you know, I assume they were out and asleep in the wildflowers for a couple of hours or something, but it's super cool to pick up, don't you think, right where we left off?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, well, look, you know, we've had both in Supernatural. We've had time jumps of a year,
yeah,
years or whatever, of a year, yeah. And we've had, you know, continued next. So I think, you know, I think both things, you know, both things can work, but I think in this situation, it was great to sort of, and you know, I loved this sort of I'm sure there's a narrative term or a film term for it, but the looping. So you get a snippet of Dean with the darkness, and then you go back to what happened in the car. You get a snippet of Sam
remembering what happened,
and then you get back to when Dean disappeared and he got knocked out. So and the same with Cass and with Crowley. And I loved that sort of little looping thing. I thought that was really good because, as you said, it created some disorientation for us. You know, you're trying to work out what's happened and now and then, and
which is what's happening with them. So you're kind of in a very similar frame of mind as your characters.
They've got in the car, and then and then stuff's happened, and you're not quite sure, you know, what order things have happened. So a very, very excellent start. I thought, big shout out to the VFX. I thought the swirling darkness was just amazing. And with the woman who we know is called Amara, is the same as the baby. Talk to me about wiki headaches of characters having the same name later. And the fact that they didn't say her name in the show.
But we know that that's
her name. I know, but strictly speaking.
Yeah, it's really, yeah.
You're talking to someone who back in season 3 had to have a page called The Woman for Ruby for 3 episodes because we didn't find out her name for 3 episodes. And it's a spoiler, and I don't do spoilers. That's my commitment to not being spoilery.
So Amara on the wiki is the baby. Or no, is she the darkness?
It's both of them. So we know, I know that because when the actress was cast, Emily Swallow was cast, they said the name of her character is Amara.
Yep.
So we know she's called
Amara. Yeah, I remember reading it.
Baby's called Amara because they said that in the show. Anyway, you don't need to know the things that keep me up at night when they're to do with wiki categorizing things. But
let's not even start with the 10 and 11 business because that's just...
Oh, no. Cry. The wiki was not built to withstand going over season 9. Anyway, the lighting in the scene between... scenes, I should say, between Amara and Dean were amazing, particularly given that they're, I mean, I assume were done green screen because it was all VFX around them. Yeah. The lighting was just stunning.
Yeah, it looked really... I assumed it was green screen, even though that's something that they don't much use anymore in VFX. And I know the show has not used green screen for a long time. Jensen did, however, say, and I think it was his meet and greet in Dallas, that they had just done quite a bit of green screen shooting, which they hadn't done for a while, and that they'd built this really big green screen set. So, I don't know, maybe it was for that, I don't know. He did not specify.
Damn him.
But it looked like it was probably green screen, but it looked amazing. The light in the light on both the characters, but also just the light in the darkness itself. And it looked really alive. You know, it had this, and you could see the field. Like you could, I didn't actually notice that the first time I watched. And then the second time I watched, you could see all the grasses.
Yes.
Around her feet and everything. And I was they're in the field. You know, and at first all I could see was the smoke, you know.
Yes. So it wasn't like they were standing in the middle of nowhere.
Nothing.
Like they were where they were.
Yeah, they were. They were in a field.
Because you could see that, yes, as you said, you could see the grass and everything. But, it was quite stunning.
It was. It was quite dramatic. And then having Dean wake up in that wildflower field was really beautiful because I thought, now that's, it was just, it's a stunning shot and Dean looks lovely asleep, coincidentally, of course, but it just feels with all the carnage that, you know, was happening, what they came out of this terrible sort of situation and then, you know, this hunter that we know is like this tough guy hunter and we pan along all these beautiful, beautiful flowers. It actually looked a bit thistly, but they were really pretty pinks and stuff, to find Dean sort of in this wildflower bed almost. And it was just such a stunning shot, kind and of the juxtaposition of Dean in a bed of wildflowers. You know, it just felt really, you know, like it made it all the more stunning that it was just such an interesting shot.
Yeah. Yeah, look, and my wondering then was, and I don't know what the flowers were, but they were very pretty. I don't know if they, maybe they had some significance in what species they were, but
I don't know what they were.
It also made me think, so throughout the episode, and we'll talk more about Mara and Dean's rest of their speech later, but it made me think, so again, we're jumping to conclusions about who she is, you know, she's a manifestation of the darkness and that's evil and all that. We don't actually know and what she is and what her connection with the darkness is. Is she the darkness manifested? Is she Mark of Cain manifested?
Yeah, we actually don't know.
Is she something else that came out with the darkness? I mean, there are implications because she says to Dean, you know, you freed me, but could mean a lot of things, but the for me, I was thinking, in sort of gaming terms, she comes across as maybe being chaotic neutral. Like she's not necessarily, you know, and this is the mystery of it. We don't know what she wants or it wants. We don't know what the darkness wants. We don't know much. You know, we've got the little snippet Death told us about the history of the darkness and God and the archangels battling it to lock it up, and that it was he called it, you know, evil. I think he called it dangerous and amoral. But you know, we're not always, we know the angels and archangels and God don't necessarily always do the right thing. So
exactly.
I'm not saying she's, you know, it's the return of paradise on earth, but I think there was quite a bit of ambiguity there, and I thought the
maybe
returning
the
to such a scene like that Ooh. Sort of pastoral scene, was some sort of, you know, comment on her, that, you know, him being in that setting. So I don't know, but it seemed, you know, it seemed pointed that he was amongst the flowers, so that,
yeah, it did seem,
and that's
like
about
there was
spring and about life and not about darkness and death.
Well, it's funny that you should say that, because I actually found, and I don't know if this was just the copy that I was watching, but I actually found that the birds and the bugs noises in this episode were really predominant. And, you know, yeah. I wonder if that ties in somewhere, because I actually noticed it a few times, that the scene where they are getting out of the car and they find all the road workers strewn everywhere, and you started with that really powerful drone that they used throughout, that, you know, it was in under Cass's scene. It's really uncomfortable drone noise that they used as when they came into the hospital, and just in all the very high tension moments. When that dropped away, the noise of the birds and the bugs got louder and louder and louder and louder, to the point where I was like, bloody hell, they're really, really loud. And then I noticed them later in the episode as well, and I've never really noticed that before. So I don't know if it was my particular copy that I was watching, or if there was, because I actually thought to myself, I wonder if there's some reason that they've got the soundtrack of the kind of wildlife soundtrack really, really loud up in it. It wasn't silence, it was just this noise of nature.
Yeah.
Which,
yeah. Yeah, so I mean, I think again, you know, mystery number one really is for us and all the characters, you know, what is the darkness and what's it doing? I mean, I have to mention before we move on, as Dean, after Sam finds Dean and they're going back to the car, and Dean's, you know, what are we going to do? And we don't know what she knows and everything. And then he gets in the car and realizes it's bogged. And he's like, yeah, let's let me get in the car. And Sam's like, yeah, you were on a roll.
You're on a roll.
Oh, that was such a gorgeous
moment.
That was
really great. And there was also a moment before that when Dean was like, you know, she's the darkness. And Sam's like, what is she called? Would she tell you that? And Dean's like, what? No, she was wearing a name badge, you know. And Sam's face was like, just give me an answer. Like, it was like the most
bitch,
epic
please.
Bitch face. It was just like, Jesus Christ, you know, and it was just, I burst out laughing at his face, and Dean's like, oh, she told me, you know, like, but Sam, this sort of exasperation with his brother being sassy was super fun. And I really, you know, that's just a wonderful thing that the show does, that you can be in these really tense moments and have little tiny things like that that just make you go, that's really gorgeous. But yeah, the tire thing was great. I really wanted them to see them pushing the car out of the hole, though.
That was just a beautiful, a beautiful, pure moment of comedy. Yeah, I just adored that.
Yeah.
So then they do take off and encounter devastation on the road.
Mm-hmm. They find all the bodies strewn everywhere and are attacked by one of the people who has the black veins all running up their neck, and there's obviously something not right going on, and who then gets shot by Deputy Jenna, who, yeah.
She was so awesome. She was tiny and awesome. She was
tiny and awesome and pretty. She
was very pretty. She was very great. Blue eyes. I thought, again, we have great casting in this show, and I think, you know, she had a lot to carry in this episode, mm-hmm. and, you know, I thought she did an awesome job of what was, you know, quite a complex character to play, because, you know, she's obviously, you know, got some toughness and she's in law enforcement, but, you know, her town's being ripped apart by...
And she's just shot a whole lot of people that she knows.
Yeah, and I think that was... I think she played that really well, that, you know, she wasn't untouched by what was going on, but she was basically hunkering down and getting on with what she had to do.
Yeah.
You know, and she had some great lines, like when she gets... when she's handed the baby and she's like, I don't even have a guinea pig.
God bless her. I loved when she's like, FBI my ass.
Sorry?
When she goes, FBI my ass. When they're talking about all this random weird stuff, she's like, yeah, FBI my ass. Yeah, I really liked her too.
Again, I thought they established quite quickly that, you know, she's competent and she's, you know, obviously very courageous, that she's taken on this, as you said, situation where she's had to kill people. She knows she's been injured herself. But she's still doing her job. And again, it's a great way to, you know, show that this is someone with a huge amount of strength and courage and someone who's going to fit in with the Winchesters in terms of, you know, being hunter-like in a way, having to make tough decisions and deal with things in the moment. So I thought they painted that picture
really well. The lady cops in this show rock.
Yeah. So really now we just need to team up with Jodie and Donna.
Yep.
And Wayward Daughters is a goer.
Yep. Could be like Supernatural PD or something. Anywho. But, yeah, and then we also saw Cass in amongst all this mess as well, because, as you say, that we were kind of cutting back and forth between stories, but it never felt disjointed in a way that the story was disjointed, more that it was supposed to feel a little bit in their own timelines. It was a little bit here, there and everywhere. And I loved Cass reliving killing Crowley and trying to figure out what happened.
Yes.
I thought that was fantastic, playing it over in his mind. Oh, God, those eye things, they just look painful.
Oh, yes. No, really... You know, I think that was that, and Misha's acting really, you know, portrayed this terrible state that he's in, that he is battling this thing.
Painful.
I did. What's the word? I noted that he was in a chicken coop.
Yeah, lots of feathers around.
Feathers and chicken poo, and that sort of again, that made me smile in terms of thinking, you know, is. You know, it's like he's in an empty chicken coop. He's an angel without his wings. I'm thinking, you know, and I'm also thinking of all the fandom terms around angels that often refer to them as, like, baby angels as nestlings, and there's egg preg for when angels get pregnant. And so there's a lot of avian terms used around angels. So I thought it was sort of appropriate. And he sort of hunkered down in the corner like a scared chicken.
Yeah, yeah. Surrounded by feathers.
Yes, yes. And I assume that, you know, we see that there's the family have shot a dog outside, which, you know, again, I took as sort of a bit of a metaphor. That's what you do to rabid dogs. And we know that, you know, Cass has been hit with the attack dog spell. So, you know, that these are the sort of people who, you know, that's what you do.
Yeah.
You shoot them.
They're not very good shots, though.
No, they were stormtrooper level accuracy.
Very strong. I thought it Hilarious, because I actually, exactly the same thing. I thought, bloody hell, they're like the stormtroopers. They can't shoot for shit. Cass is running and they're like shooting everything in that's around him. Gosh. Yeah, anyway. But it was great to watch him, because, I mean, I was thinking, oh, how did Crowley get out of this, you know? And then we see him kind of go, you know, excrement, you're not going to, you know, beat me up. And then Cass beats the crap out of him, and then yes. He falls to the ground and he's stabbed. And straight away I'm like, well, there's no Flash. So, and then obviously Cass is going, wait, there's no Flash. And yeah. So he's playing it over and over in his head as well. And it was awesome then to come to the other camera angle and see the smoke come out of Crowley's mouth and down the drain before the angel blade goes into his back. And I was like, oh, sneaky bugger.
Yeah, and look, that was, I thought that was, we were all wondering how they were both going to get out of that that situation. So
Even though Mark wanted to keep telling us Crowley was dead.
Oh, God.
Regardless of the fact that, you know, everybody else, man and his dog, was saying he wasn't.
Although, now this is, I'll give Mark Shepherd this. It had planted enough seed of doubt in my mind, obviously, that when he takes over Marnie's body, I thought, oh.
Are we not going to get Mark Shepherd back?
Maybe this is his new vessel. Mm. And so I actually, for a few moments, I'm thinking,
oh, no.
Well, you know, who knows? The show could do that. I will give you that, Mark Shepherd. You created a moment in me where I did go along thinking, well, it's been nice having you, Mark.
But I know, I thought that was really, really cool way of getting him out of that situation, because, you know, we were all wondering how that was going
to happen. Well, it had to be something like that, or someone else had to intervene. I would have thought maybe Crowley could have called some minions or something, but obviously he
did, but later. He had business on his mind.
You can't when you're trapped in a devil's trap.
No, so he was trapped in it. Oh, well, it was a spell, wasn't it? Rowena put an immobilizing spell on him.
Oh, that's true. I think there were...
I'm sure that's what the minions said at the end.
Yes, sorry.
It was like the Harry Potter spell.
Yes.
The petrifying spell.
Haven't you got that memorized?
Oh, I nearly said it. I've just watched all 9 movies.
It's 9 of them.
I'm sure there's 9. Yeah, there's 9. Anyway, so, and then we're back with the Winchesters rocking up at the hospital and finding a not so encouraging bodies strewn everywhere outside.
I tell you, I knew the American healthcare system was bad, but that was one fucked hospital.
It was not real good. But I love when Dean's like getting, he doesn't know what to prepare in the back, and he's got like, I love that they're still carrying the holy oil in that ancient jug.
They had a couple of those. I looked at some screen caps of that because I wanted to see. Obviously, we'd been teased with the promo pics about bloody grenade launcher.
He didn't do it. That was just Jensen doing a photo.
Bloody hell. And there was also a photo of him with an arrow.
Yeah, yes, there was too. Looking at the tip of an arrow, I remember that. Yes. Yeah, no, that didn't happen either.
So, yes, crossbow. I'm not sure. Bad supernatural. Jesus like
bad
that.
Bad Jensen.
Well, no, I like to think it was Jensen probably begging, going, "Please,
please, please."
We don't know what it is. Surely a grenade launch is appropriate in this situation, or at least a crossbow, Daryl Dixon style.
And they're like, "We don't have the budget for the explosions, Jensen. How many times do we have to tell you?"
But arrows,
arrows, it could work. Arrows would work.
They know arrow specialists on another show.
They do. But I did like that they still have those ancient jugs that Cass bought back from...
The holy oil.
Yeah, somewhere. With the holy oil in them, I think that's...
Jerusalem.
He gently pops it into his duffel. I was like, what?
I wonder if it has to be kept in that. Like, couldn't they decant it into
a
bottle or something?
Into, like, a bottle, you know, that's not going to break.
I assume they blessed or something.
That's what I thought. I was like, why do they keep them in that? That's like a... ancient terracotta thing that's just going to
weigh a ton.
Exactly. And he's carefully popping it in the bag with all the guns that then he throws over his shoulder.
Should have taken that crossbow, Dean.
Should have.
But put up your hand if you want to see Dean with a crossbow this season.
Yay. My hand's up.
Both of them are up. Yay. All your hands are up.
All three of them. What? Yeah. So then we go into the hospital and find that the place is
devastated,
and there's dead people. Yeah, beautiful. And there's dead people everywhere. And then Sam splits to go and check things out, while Dean splits to go and stitch up poor Jenna. Owies.
Great work there. I mean, I love a bit of wound tending, and we don't see it often enough, particularly given what happens to the boys. And so it was actually good to see. I'm not sure if it needed, you know, more than a couple of stitches. I think she might have needed a bit more tending, and I hope he jabbed her with some broad spectrum antibiotics there.
I think so. I think she might have needed that. Yeah.
But
he had no gloves on or anything either. He's just like, well, stitching away.
Oh, I'm sure he would have used the antiseptic hand wash that is gold standard in hospitals these days. So I'm sure that would have been sufficient. I was pleased to see he actually used the proper surgical thread rather than dental floss. So, and again, though, it's those sort of scenes where both it's an indication of how tough she is, because she sits there and takes it. Excuse me. But it's that nice thing of reminding us that this is part of their life, that Dean is actually, you know, competent at field medicine like this, and we all love, you know, we all have a bit of a competency kick when it comes to the boys. So
yeah,
these
love
little things, which in terms of the plot aren't taking it anywhere, are lovely character beats, I think, we know that Dean must do regularly, but we don't get to see it that often.
And I really loved also their little conversation where she was sort of really distressed that she had to kill all these people, and Dean was like, well, you were doing what you were trained for. And she was like, no, what I was trained for was saving people. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, it looks better on paper, huh? Yeah. And
lovely, lovely foreshadowing of the conversation.
Lovely. Exactly.
That, as I said before, having set her up as being, you know, a mini hunter, like, you know, a version of them in a way, she then makes an appropriate mirror for those thoughts and conversations. So, you know, she's them before 10 years of shit.
Yeah, exactly. She is. Oh, poor girl.
You know, she's the... naive or innocent, but it's it's them before they'd been through what they've been through over 10 years. It's when they thought, you know, they could just have the bumper sticker saving people, hunting things, and it was reasonably unproblematic. They even thought there was going to be a family business, and, you know, those things were quite, they generally thought they were quite clear cut. And, you know, we joined them back in season one at a time when it was all starting to get more
to unravel,
and it wasn't clear of, you know, even from season one, sometimes the people weren't the ones you wanted to save because they were evil too, and sometimes the monsters weren't evil and did you kill them, and, you know, there are a lot of echoes of Croatoan, I think, in this episode.
Very much. I mean, there were a lot of echoes of Croatoan. Apart from the fact that they were trapped in a hospital with, you know, and Sam getting infected and the town being rabid and all that kind of stuff that happened in Croatoan, it also had a very similar sense of desperation, helplessness and claustrophobia that I think that Croatoan episode had. Yes. That it felt a lot of that, which I really like that one. And Justin Below is another one that they have that really claustrophobic feeling of that trapped. Yes. And, you know, and they were trapped in this hospital in this episode with these rabbits, as Sam so beautifully called them, you know, coming for them. And it did feel very Croatoan. And I think that helped also give it that very, that kind of throwback vibe that I felt like the whole episode had, with a lot of the brother conversations and, you know, the saving a baby, you know, a baby that's infected with something supernatural, as it turns out, you know. I mean, that is where this whole story started, for God's sake.
Yes, I think there's a lot of fans who felt there was a mirror back to, particularly with Dean's willingness to he's immediately in there. Yep, give me the baby again, which I think is both, you know, is a wonderful character moment. I mean, you know, what are you doing, Dean? Like, all he know, you know, and that's, I think, was important again. Both there was that, you know, feedback to that's what his life has been about since John put Sam in his arms and said, yep, take your brother outside. And I think that's important with the conversation that he then has with Sam, because I think it's important for us to know that, you know, that part of Dean is still there. He hasn't lost, he's lost sight perhaps of, as Sam says, why don't we listen to the conversation anyway, that Dean and Sam conversation.
When did we forget how to do this?
What?
Dean, if we don't change right now, all of our crap is just going to keep repeating itself.
Okay, I don't even what?
This kill first, question later. What happened to us? Hunting things, we're good at that. Sure, we're great at that, but it's only half of the bumper sticker, man.
Sam, I'm trying to save that baby.
And what about the others out there?
You mean the ones trying to kill us?
I mean the ones that are sick, the ones that are dying.
Yeah, who won't rest until they've infected us all.
So we just forget about a cure?
What cure? Jenna's cure?
There is always a cure. You just have to want to find it.
Yeah, how are you going to find it if you're dead? And around we go.
Saving people means all of the people, Dean. Not just that baby. Not just each other. I unleashed a force on this world that could destroy it to save you.
And I told you not to.
And I'd do it again. In a second, I would do it again. And that is what I'm talking about. This isn't on you. It is on us. We have to change.
What are you thinking?
Yeah, it was that was almost an incredibly, not just an incredibly self-aware moment, I think, for the brothers, but it was almost a self-aware moment for the show. I felt like that they were really harking back to what these brothers originally did when we first met them. With, they didn't just go out and kill everything. They did try to save people, and that is, and we've had this conversation before, that is something that they've strayed away from a little bit because of what their life has become. And they do kill the demon with the knife and not worry about the vessel, and they did look at killing Alex when she was a vampire, instead of, even though they knew the cure, their first thing was, well, she's going to die, you know. And we've had this story about how they've become quite pragmatic about what they have to do. And that has been reflected in this kill first, ask questions later attitude that is really kind of, not just Dean, but Sam as well. And it's kind of role, that's kind of become how they roll very much. And I think Sam sort of bringing this up pulls it right back to who they were and why they started doing this in the first place.
Acknowledgement that this, you know, it isn't that they've just been doing something different and they can just go back to the old ways, because they've learnt that life's much more fucking complicated than that. So it's, they know it's not as simple as saving people, hunting things. But I think, you know, the wonderful clarity of Sam's thought is, let that be our aim, to save everyone.
Yeah.
And let's, that should be the thing we're aiming for. And, you know, if along the way things turn out differently or whatever, that will be what happens. But let's not, you know, it's sort of a bit like, you know, aim for the mountains and you might hit the treetops. You know, let's not just start by going the lowest sort of common denominator way. We know if we just blast our way out of this, we'll get out of it. if you try to do more, then you might achieve more in a way. And, you know, I think that was, and, you know, that was a really important moment and a stand for him to take, really.
Yeah. And I think it was also a wonderful moment from him and also earlier from Dean a couple of times when they really were sharing the load of what had happened. And, you know, where in the past they may have said, I told you not to save me, and even though Dean did say that, you know, he had kind of owned it earlier. Well, lock and key. I love the concept of them being the lock and key. On
Oh, okay. Got it. Who didn't flash back to French Mistake?
I know, right?
It was really hard not to have a giggle, and you know, I'm pretty sure at least half of fandom was acting out the, where there's a lock, there must be a key.
Yeah, I know, but it was such a great moment. But then even in the moment just before Sam, when he's sort of saying, you know, we've both done this stuff, you know, we've made mistakes, and, you know, when we're old, we can drink beers, and when we're farting sawdust, I don't even know what that means, you know, we can relive them, but right now we've got to do this thing. But there was, and then Sam also saying, this is on us, it's not just on me, it's not just on you, it's on us, and we're the ones who have to change what we're doing because we are both responsible for what's happening here. And it was a really nice ownership, which I think they've been kind of coming back towards for a little bit, but it really was a bit of a change in direction, I think, from a lot of the pointing of fingers and anger that we've had in past seasons.
Or trying to do it because you're trying to protect your brother,
yeah.
You know, thinking, well, I'll take this on because it'll protect him. And I thought it was important, though, that, you know, Sam said, you know, about saving, about doing something just to save Dean, and he would do that again in a heartbeat.
Yeah,
so he's not saying... Let's
change.
It. Yeah, it's not saying, it, which would have been what they'd done in the past.
Yeah, we're not going to do that anymore, you know. They're
so
saying, this
saying,
is what we do, this, and I'm going to do it again, but...
Let's incorporate, you know, we're going to keep doing that, but as I said, let's make our aim, let's save everyone, not just let's save me or let's save two people or save the baby. Let's try and fix everyone and see where that takes us, because we might achieve it, and that would be awesome. And then, of course, the thing is, Dean listens,
and
Dean stops
listens.
And says, you know, and I think we've heard.
What are you thinking? You know,
exactly.
And Sam's face is like, oh yeah, and he nods, and I really love that. Even when they come to that, and Sam tells him the really bad idea at first, and Dean's like, no, that's just not happening, and Sam's like, let's do what we both do. You do what you do best. I'm going to do what I'm going to do best. Let me do what I do best, and let's just do this thing. And there was a real ownership of what their roles were as well, and, you know, sort of saying to Dean, trust me to do this. Allow me to do what you know I can do.
Yeah.
Which actually bounced back at the end when Sam was like, you know, I'm going to find a cure, and Dean's like, I know you will, you know. And
yeah.
And there was this nice kind of – I really appreciated
it's
Sam.
It's like a mutual competence kink.
Yeah.
Or something. It's like I love it when they acknowledge that – which we know that they each know the other has amazing – you know, skills and
yeah.
abilities. They've been hunting together for so long, and, you know, even going back to when Sam had, you know, just come back from college and was, you know, a bit greener, they still went straight back into being a fantastic team together and doing this, and you know, it wasn't like Dean was trying to protect Sam all the time or anything. And I think, you know, we've, as you said, we've seen some difficult years now of them working through this, and, you know, by no means do I think everything's in the past, but
no.
I think the difference, as you said, here was a point of listening, of accepting, and, you know, I'm not saying there's not going to be a time when there's pushback from one or the other or anything
well,
like that.
Well, there always has been, so there's never
there
not going to
be
that.
They're human
yeah.
at the moment.
they are.
But I just, you know, I got almost a chill when Dean's like, okay, you know, tell me what the plan is.
Yeah, I love that, because it wasn't like a fuss or anything either. It was just, he kind of just looked down and goes, and he looked up and goes, what are you thinking? You know, and it was kind of just like, okay. And it wasn't like, okay. It was just like,
you know, I'm on board with
I'm on
this.
Board. What
yeah,
are you thinking?
And I loved, you know, Sam Sam being, you know, in a way, a philosopher in this moment of thinking about that mission. And you know, I think the line about it's only one half of the bumper sticker,
it was
wonderful. And also, they more than anyone, they know it's not, you know, a bumper sticker suggests, you know, a slogan that you can slap on and you don't really need to think about. It's, you know, it can have very little depth. But we know that this whole, you know, saving people and hunting things in the family business has something they've, you know, been through and round, and how they do it and how they don't do it in the right way and the wrong way for 10 years.
Yeah.
And so I think an acknowledgement now of, hey, we've got some choice here about even just acknowledging there's a choice in the way they go about it, that they can do it differently with maybe the same outcome, but maybe a better outcome. And I thought that was just so powerful.
Yeah, I thought the whole conversation was powerful. I thought there was some, that, you know, there was some little nuggets along the way of, I think when Dean first talked about being the lock and the key, and, you know, like it's both of us, you know, that, and then him once again talking about owning, you know, we've made some terrible mistakes, you know, let's just move on from that. We'll talk about them later when we're old over an icy brew, you know, but let's just move on. He's even talking about getting old, which, what the hell is that about?
And also not about, you know, not playing, as you said, not playing the blame game. It's not about guilt. It is about owning your responsibility.
Yeah.
But then taking action. And I think that's a difference. You know, guilt is often about owning something but not taking action to change it or to change what
you've
done.
There was no wallowing in this episode at all, which is nice. It's nice to see them not wallowing.
Well, yeah, and I think that's, you know, the bad side of guilt, or, you know, this good side of guilt. The good side of guilt is taking responsibility. The bad side is being driven to inaction because you're overwhelmed with the feeling of having done something bad, and you don't then act. You don't think you're good enough to act or that you can ever do anything to make things better. And so I think we see Dean going, okay, we've done this, owned that, okay, now what
moving
do we
on.
Need to do? And Sam going, okay, we've been doing it this way.
It
outcome's not so great. Let's try doing it another way. Outcomes might be better. And I mean, I just said that was quite, you know, I would love to know how long that took to write, because it seemed quite eloquent in its writing without, you know, they could have been pages and pages of words, but I thought they got through the message through quite simply in a way,
in a way that they would talk to each other, which is not necessarily the clearest way, but it's a way that they both would understand.
And
then of course they both went off to do their little missions, and Sam got jumped by the tiny weenie nurse.
We have missed out, though. I just wanted to go back to. Oh, no, just because the phone call with Cass.
Oh, yes, the phone call.
Just while we're talking about stuff.
Because
I thought that was, again, I thought that was a powerful moment that, in the midst of everything he's in, that Cass wants to check in on how Dean is, because all he knows is they sent some spell out there and he's got no idea what's happened with it. With Dean, and whether, you know, the last time he saw Dean tried to kill him, basically.
And I mean, Dean's sort of going, God, after all I've just done, I'm just, and Cass is like, don't worry about that, you know, are you okay?
At least
he's learned that from a couple of other guys.
Well, yes. I mean, and I suppose there was he's
an angel.
And a lot of forgiveness there. But also I think there's his order of, well, he's in a particular situation where he hasn't got much time, and his order of priority was going to be, you know, are you Mark free now? Are you okay? Things are very, you know, I think very different if he finds out Dean is still affected by the mark.
Yeah.
So I think in some ways finding out that Dean and obviously then Sam are okay.
Him, yeah.
I love them going on speakerphone.
I know.
Because, of course, Cass didn't know where Sam was either.
No.
Are those boys going to have some stories to swap? Well, I nearly killed Sam and then I killed Death.
And I killed Death. And I mean, Cass is already going, the darkness is out? It's a woman? You killed Death? What the hell?
And I know some fans were like, oh, well, you know, Dean didn't apologise for beating the crap out of Cass. Oh, and I think, well,
sort of.
We didn't have a lot of time.
No, we didn't. And he did and his I think after Cass all life.
Cass made it clear that he was there to have, you know, he was there to find out one thing. And yeah.
Cass didn't want to hear an apology.
You know, he just made the call to heaven. So, yeah, but I thought it was, and then he goes, oh, we might not be seeing you for a while. And I thought,
he's obviously not going to be seeing them for a while.
Well, again, see, I think it's interesting we react to, okay, these angels have captured Cass, they've got a hood over his head, they've strung him up by a hook. Now, what do they know? Here's the guy that actually let Metatron escape from heaven.
Yeah.
He's affected by something that's some sort of spell, I'm assuming they can tell. His eyes are looking, you know, in major, needs a major case of Visine or something. So I'm not immediately going to the, you know, again, their motivation may not be bad. Their motivation might be good for them. It might be we have to find out what Cass knows about where Metatron
is. Before we bring him back into heaven or something like that. I don't know. I kind of got a bad vibe from them just because I think that there was probably a better way to do that than string him up and put a hood over his head.
He is affected by this spell, though.
Yeah, I know, but he's not affected like, say, the human was who was affected. He's able to control himself. He was able to push Neil before Todd away and also the kid with the gun who played Todd in that episode in Wishful Thinking. And he was able then to actually to say to the angels, the first thing we've got to do is find a witch who can get this spell off me, you know, before I go to heaven. So he was able to kind of say all that. So it's almost like Cass is affected but is maybe because he's an angel, he seems to have more of a level of control over it than, say, the blonde girl that got that the pool hall boys.
I don't necessarily think they've got Cass's best interests at heart, but I think they may have Heaven's best interests. And as I said, from their point of view, here they've got this angel who let Metatron out.
Yeah.
So, you know, he wouldn't be number one on their Christmas card list.
No.
So I'm just thinking, again, we can jump to conclusions and, you know, I'm quite sure they're not, you know, they're not going to sit down, have a cup of tea and ask Cass, where's Metatron? But, I'm not jumping to the conclusion of... And, of course, the other thing is we don't really know what's been going on in Heaven, which is the other side. I mean, have they factionalized again? Are they officially sent by Heaven or...
Or they could be rogues, you know.
They could be some sort of, you know, rogue angels or an angel hit squad. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
I'm just saying that... It was a bit unclear, but when that line of, I won't be seeing you for a while, broke me a little bit.
Yeah, I know. I was like, oh, no, poor Cass. And back at the hospital.
Back
at the hospital, Sammy gets jumped by the tiny weenie nurse, who I thought, that is a great job to get, that girl who got whoever was Cass. I guess she was a stunt woman or something like that because she was doing a bit of fighting. But I was like, what a great gig. Because she was really little, and like when Jared turned around and he's like this huge hulking mass of a character, and she has to jump on him, I thought that would be a good job to have. But anyway, that was
although possibly not. I remember, I think it's in the Jensen talked about it at a convention in the episode after Dark Dynasty. The prisoner.
Yeah.
When he's in the Stein's mansion and the guy puts a plastic bag over his head.
Oh yeah, that's and right.
Jensen, and Jensen was... talked about how the you know, day player whose job it was to do that was sort of really hesitant about jamming a plastic bag over Jensen Ackles' head and suffocating him. I think I remember, you know, Jensen almost had to do it himself.
Yeah, it's like, just do it.
Okay.
Just do it. But yeah, and then of course the blood goes into Sam's mouth, and we assume he's infected with the thing. Look like it's gone up his neck at the end there. And when the rabbits came in and sniffed him, you assumed that they smelt it on him and that's why they left him alone?
I assume so. I mean, that would make sense. Although I thought, oh, maybe we're back to, again, I was having Croatoan flashbacks. Maybe they smell that he's special in some other way.
That's what I thought. I thought, oh, because I wasn't sure. I was like, are they smelling that he's already infected so they don't have to worry about him, or are they smelling something else? Are they smelling like demon blood, or are they smelling like traces of grace that might be still in him, or are they smelling that Sam is just, you know, something different altogether, and so they're kind of backing away rather than you know, moving away because his eye is just one of our guys, we don't have to bite him anymore.
And of course, while Sam's going through all of this, we get to see more of what happened between Dean and the darkness.
You're as bad as they say you are, why haven't you hurt me?
For the same reason that you'll never hurt me. We're bound, Dean. We'll always be bound. You helped me. I helped you. No matter where I am, who I am, we will always help each other.
So what did you think of what the darkness had to say to Dean? Well, the person we're assuming is the darkness.
Look,
and
I think she
for the time being, we will call the darkness.
Look, I think she's some sort of manifestation of the darkness, but I think again, look, it's really hard when you've seen little bits of spoilers from future episodes and little bits of description. And I know because, again, just to go back to the wiki, we try and keep it so that we only have for this episode what we found out in this episode, and it's really easy when you're writing stuff to make leaps and go, oh, yes, her name's Amara and she's a manifestation of the darkness. Well, that wasn't, neither of those things were said. And yes, we know her name is Amara, and she probably is a manifestation of the darkness, but she could be a manifestation of the Mark of Cain. She could be a manifestation of an aspect of the darkness. Mm-hmm. We know nothing about the darkness. We don't know if it's an entity or a lot of entities or, you know, what it is. So, anyway, so we don't know what it is. I think the thing I took away, there was an incredible, I don't know if chemistry's quite the word, a frisson between her and Dean. I mean, there was just that. I love how they, if you have a look at this last scene between them, they start out both on the far sides of the frame, and then they end up almost as if they're going to kiss.
Well, I really thought they were going to start making out. Like, I was like. And it was hot. I can't deny it. I was like, well, this is a bit hot, quite frankly. The scene kind of got a bit hot. And I was like, oh, my God, they're going to stop making out. If he's going to kiss me, he's going to, oh, they didn't kiss. Good.
But I thought it was, and Bob Singer was a director on this episode, but the way, again, if you watch the scene, and again, I went through the whole episode in screen caps because I'm a rabid fan. They start out on far sides of the screen in sort of full body, and they end up then in full profile right in the middle, but not touching. And so that creates this tension, but also of them coming together. So as she's talking about them being bound, they come together. So that really mirrored in the action, mirrored what they were she was talking about. And we don't know what that means. We don't know if she was, you know, speaking metaphorically, or if there is an actual, some sort of, you know, mystical connection between them because Dean had the mark. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought, yeah, I don't know what she means by being bound. I thought it was interesting, actually, because I really did think they were going to kiss or something. And when they didn't, and what you said, that they were never actually touching, it made me go, was she in Dean's mind? Was she actually a physical manifestation that Dean was seeing in the darkness? Or was that something, he was really asleep in the wildflowers the whole time and it was something being projected into his mind? So I started to actually doubt whether she was real in in real sense, you know, in real tangible and corporeal, whether she was in a corporeal sense.
Yes.
But I don't know what that means. My initial assumption was because Dean had had the mark, and he had the mark for such a long time, and it took such a hold of him that it actually did turn him into a demon at one point, that the mark is, you know, in him somehow, and that if he's the lock and the key and she's, you know, that she's got the mark as well, and that there was some kind of, I guess I was thinking probably metaphysical bonding, but binding between them, something to do with the mark, having had it ties him to her in some way or form. And I mean, and she is saying that it will mean that he will always protect her no matter what. And then, of course, when we found out that the bub at the end has the mark, and he was so fervent and furied in the way that he must rescue that baby. And when you go back and watch that in hindsight, the amount of times he says, I'm going to rescue the baby, I'm going to rescue the baby, you start to think, well, is he actually just wanting to save people? Or is it this, he's compelled, if the baby is then tied to the darkness, is he compelled to save that baby above everything else, and, you know, storming out through the rabbits, and because he was very, very angry, is it because, as the darkness said, he will protect her above everything, he will do anything to protect her, and she will do the same for him? Is that why he was so focused on ensuring that baby was protected, not just because he wanted to save the baby? So, I don't know. I really love that was all created, and that you were left questioning his reasons behind his, you know, very focused goal on getting that baby out of there suddenly became a bit clouded.
You can read that either way, because, you know, of course, Dean Winchester's going to...
He would do that anyway, yeah.
I think there's very, very good reason for that. But as you say, I think your interpretation in terms of, yes, whatever this, him being bound to the darkness and will protect it, why the darkness needs to manifest or reincarnate or whatever as a baby,
I don't know. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it doesn't, because I think there's an assumption that the darkness created the rabbits as part of... you know, the aftermath of the smoke, but we don't really know that either. We don't know what they are or why they came about. We don't know
Something else has been released.
Exactly. Or we don't know they're like an antibody to the darkness, and, you know, maybe they were going to the hospital to get the baby, you know, like, because they knew that the baby was there, like Damien, you know, like, and so they had to go and destroy the baby, and so Dean and Sam ended up at the hospital to protect the baby because it's the darkness and the antibody rabbits were coming. You know, like, you don't...
But again, there's that ambiguity of not knowing...
Yeah, you don't know what they are. Their role is... Or why.
We don't know. We still don't know. You know, we know nothing about the darkness and what it might want. We don't know why God and the archangels locked it up. You know, there's a lot we don't know.
No, there's a lot we don't know. And it's really, really cool because, like, you know, when you...
And look, it had a little weeny mark of cane. It was so cute.
It was so cute. A teeny, teeny weeny mark of cane. I'm like, that is the cutest thing ever. I tell you what,
if there weren't a whole lot of fandom mothers out there looking at their babies,
let's
draw a little mark of cane on you. You'll make a lovely cosplayer.
Because I was actually thinking,
out there, if there isn't a baby at a con coming up
with a tiny mark of cane,
you have failed fandom.
But I was thinking too, on the mark of cane, going back to, we're not really sure what anything was, you know, maybe that baby is not the darkest. What if that baby was born as a new lock or something like that, and this mark of Cain was a lock? And so I've been going in all sorts of circles with this.
But then again, we know that the effect of the mark is not a good one.
No.
So are we going to have serial killer? Is it going to be the baby that murdered the world? Is the baby going to have to wear murder diapers?
Is the baby going to grow like the Amazon baby?
Yes, yes. So is it suddenly going to be full grown?
Is it going to be full grown Emily Swallow's character suddenly? I don't know. It's really interesting.
I don't know.
There's so many questions, and I really loved that. I love that you came away from it going, we don't really know what the darkness is. The boys don't know. We don't know. We don't know what the rabbits are, why they are, what caused it. We don't know really.
And it appeared quite localized. So that ties in. I think that ties in quite well to your theory of maybe they were aiming to get to the hospital and the baby, because it wasn't. The darkness is obviously big, but this was happening around that town and that hospital, and obviously
and they seemed focused on that hospital.
Yeah,
and they were trying to get into the baby room.
Yeah, when Dean's driving Jenna, and they stop at the gas station, everyone there seems okay. So, you know, it is quite a localized event. So I'm blowing into your theory here, Amy. I'm liking this.
Cool. But yeah, we don't know that, and we don't know, you know, with Sam. Sam's obviously gonna somehow get cured, because we know he doesn't drop dead from this thing. So does it not affect him because he's got, you know, because of what else Sam has going on inside him, or he's got a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, and maybe it will just stop.
Does he find a cure, or does it just suddenly stop? Like it just suddenly started. Possibly.
I mean, it could be the sort of thing. I mean, it seemed to be quite short term, in that people were affected and then they died quite quickly.
Within like 4 hours or something. Yeah.
So obviously if the baby is a number of, you know, 100 miles away, it's, you know, that's not going to be an effective tool. So maybe then it just, well, either people die or it dissipates and he'll be okay, just sort of naturally
okay. Yeah, so we don't know any of that, I love that we don't know any of that. And of course we also had Crowley getting his end away in the orgy
Crowley in a now look, I have to say, there seems to be, I think we need to, next time we get to talk to the writers, some strange fascination with this show and sort of the suburban swingers scene. We've had a number of episodes where this has come up. They were in a house with the most putrid orange 70s couch, which really, like, would kill my libido just to start with. So not a good setting for an orgy, particularly a birthday orgy. You know, traditionally birthday orgies are held somewhere with satin sheets, not orange boucle lounge suites. But anyway, maybe that's just me.
Maybe that's just how that particular suburb, wherever they were, rolled.
America, I know you've got a lot wrong, but that was just going a step too far.
And the swinger couple really actually reminded me of the Christmas pagan gods in the way they were talking.
They had that, yes. Yes, there's a particular view our writers have of life in the suburbs, which I think some of them are still working out some childhood issues, to be honest. You might all live the hipster life in LA now, but I think it all came from the burbs of somewhere that had horrible orange couches. Parents were possibly doing something with the neighbours. So anyway, I did love Marnie Crowley. I thought she was awesome. I would have actually been happy to have had her hanging around. We know, you know, Mark
had flushes. Bless.
She's too young for that, but anyway, that was a good giggle. And then, of course, we have what for many I think was reveal.
Oh my god!
The episode,
the cage, something screaming. Ah! One of them is screaming in the cage, and oh my god, this set my brain on fire. I literally think I jumped up. I'm so excited by this. Like, this episode had me all the way through kind of going, oh god, I just don't know what's happening. And then that and the baby with the mark at the end were just two like brain explosions for me. I was just like, I didn't see the baby thing coming at all. I was like, oh my god. And then I clapped because I was just so deliriously happy with glee at the surprise of it. And then the cage thing, honestly, god, that would like the best four-letter word I've heard for a while. I was just like, this is amazing. And then, of course, I just start thinking, because if Lucifer, like, I can't even get it out, I'm so excited. If Lucifer had the mark of Cain and the mark of Cain came off Dean, would it come off Lucifer as well?
Lucifer gave it to Cain.
Yeah, but Cain gave it to Dean, but Cain still had it.
But then, yeah, I mean, Lucifer's an angel, archangel, though, so I'm not sure if things play the same.
Same. Because I was like, what if he's, like clear of the darkness now and is just like, oh, shit, I'm an asshole. Locked in the cage. How did this happen to me? With my brother that I really don't like. And what's he in?
And who's that over in the corner? What's his name?
And what's Lucifer in? I had this conversation. Because he's not in Sam. Is he just like that light, like Cass was for a while?
He's in his
natural
corporeal
form.
He's a, yes. Which, according to fanfic, usually has tentacles, which I'm okay with.
That's so funny. But yeah, that's so exciting. So do we, well, do we get to see the cage jewels?
Well, I think so.
Yeah, I think
one
so
would
too.
Think... Also, there was a leak.
Yeah, there was.
You know,
I was wondering if you were going to say that. We both kind of went silent.
Yeah. Bob Singer, who possibly doesn't quite realise how the internet worked, post a photo of something that possibly is the cage.
I think it looked like the cage, and I was like, oh, dude, that was, why did you do that?
Because I figure he thought he posted it somewhere so obscure that fans wouldn't see it. Like,
don't
have you
ridiculous.
Met us? Have you met us? I hope someone, he's going to be at Chicago Con. I hope someone asks him.
Hey, yes, Bob, have you met us?
have you met us? By the way, why did you post that spoilerific photo? Oh, that you'd probably sack someone else if they posted it.
Exactly. It's awesome, too. I was so excited when I saw that photo because I saw it after the episode. I was like, shut up. I'm very excited about this prospect.
Well, and that we will get to see possibly Lucifer and or Michael again.
Yep, I'm really excited about it. That's what I'm really excited about, not just the cage. The cage I'm pretty excited about because that looked super cool. But I'm really excited that we might get to see Lucifer and Michael and that they might have some kind of role in this story about the darkness. I love Lucifer, which I always feel awfully awkward about saying.
Yes.
But when I say in my outline voice, I think I'm going to get sucked into the ground. Yeah, like I know.
I think that's why a lot of fans refer to him as Lucy.
Lucy,
to take away.
So it's not like I'm.
It covers you in casual conversation if people think that you're not actually saying Lucifer.
Lucifer, and I'm not getting dragged into the ground like, you know, drag me to hell or anything like that every time I say it because I'm really worried about it. But I do love that character. I couldn't bear it if they didn't have Lucifer come back in Mark Pellegrino form. They would have to if they did. But
oh no, they would
have to.
Right.
Yeah, they'd have to somehow bring Nick back. But
I think that's hand wavable.
Yeah, I do too. Like, they rebuilt Cass a bunch of times.
Oh, and we had Anna come back after she got exploded. Abaddon come back in a. So I have no doubt that when they think it's worth it, they will do the. Oh, yes, we can give you your form
excited.
Back.
I'm that's, very excited.
That's, and they know that fandom would be more than happy to, like, you could just say, oh, I ate a turnip and I got my body back. They would be fine. We would be fine with that.
We'd be fine with anything to get Mark Pellegrino
you
back.
You do not need a proper explanation if we can have Mark Pellegrino and or Matt Cohen back.
And or Matt Cohen. That one makes less sense. I was like, and Matt Cohen. I was like, wait, that was young John Winchester. That's like... back in time, but still, okay. And then I was like, but then, you know, I don't care. Makes no sense. I don't care. I want it.
Anyway, by the way, if people aren't watching How to Get Away with Murder Season 2, which Matt Cohen is on,
I have started watching it again.
You're missing out.
But I'm only up to episode
2 tomorrow.
He was
both shirtless and bringing some serious acting chops this episode.
What episode are we up to in that season?
Two, I think.
Oh, yeah, I get that. I'm watching it on... television, proper television. So that's on tomorrow night. Monday night. Monday night.
Yes, he was excellent, excellent. And his characters turned out to be very, very integral. But wonderful. I've not ever seen Matt in anything other than Supernatural, so it was great to see. Boy's got some abs. Mm-hmm. I had to say, at one point where it's a sex scene and he's taking his shirt off, I thought, see, that experience at karaoke is coming in handy.
Yeah.
Those times you took your shirt off for us.
All those times.
All those times. It's made you more comfortable with your body.
Like you wouldn't be anyway.
Back to what's on the page?
They're very, very exciting, and very exciting to kind of, you know, like ponder on what that will mean and what roles they would have if either one of them were, you know, brought back into the Winchester's worlds. And also just the fact that by the looks of things, we're going to get Crowley going down to check out the cage in hell and find out what the hell's going on. Which now, is that very would be exciting.
Crowley versus Lucifer talking to Lucifer would be a good...
be pretty awesome.
Yes.
That would be pretty awesome. So there was a couple of extremely interesting twists in this episode, I thought.
Definitely.
Outside of all the things where I'm going, ah, what's happening?
And just having everyone back. I mean,
everyone back.
You know, we've been through so many of them, and hellacious never gets easier. And I get to this point where, you know, it almost feels like I'm never going to see them again, and it almost becomes theoretical that they're going to be back on my television, and then they are.
And then they are, and you're dragged back into their chaotic life, and it's wonderful, and they're new and shiny and never before seen.
Never want to let them go.
No, never want to let them go, and they get better every season, and I love grown-up Winchesters. I love the grown-up Winchesters.
Oh, yes, definitely. And I think that's a good way of putting it. And really, we are, you know, I'm really keen now after this episode. You know, I did a season 10 rewatch, but now I want to do a season everything rewatch. But, yeah. You know, even like 6 to 10, because I really think, or even 8, 9 and 10, I suppose, but... and because I know it was particularly part of Carver's arc about, you know, them growing up. And,
yeah. And they have. They really, really have.
Well, I think they've... And both that they've still been wearing the weight of everything they've been through. And it's a rare show that is so explicit. I mean, I think Buffy did it quite well, Angel to some extent. But it's a rare show that can go this many seasons and that you feel the characters really have... experienced all the shit they've been through, and that it shows it's having an effect on how they behave and how they think. And I think I think the X-Files did it to some extent, although not as much. There was still, I don't think they were, because they, you know, Buddy Scully didn't believe for so long until it was unbelievable that she didn't believe.
Yeah. It's like, please, how can you not believe?
But I think, you know, it is a rare show that does this. And so, and you know, we've said before that we're so lucky that the characters have aged as the actors have aged.
Yeah.
And they look back. And Sam and Dean from the first couple of seasons look like the characters they are. They are younger. They are more naive. They are not as battered and tested and beaten about by this incredible life they live, and you look at the guys now and you really see that. I mean, you know, there's kudos to the writers who have moved them along this path, and so that when they have the sort of conversation that we played earlier between Sam and Dean, it's got those layers of what's gone on in the previous seasons behind it. We know this has been a struggle. And we know that there's no easy answer. It's not like they're like, you know, going to slap their forehead and go, or in Sam's case, a five head, and go, we forgot about the saving people thing. And it's not like that. We know that they know that. It's just, it's not that easy. And we know that it's not like they've now come up with a new way of doing things and that's going to just work out for them, because of course it won't, it never has. But this conscious taking stock and putting the brakes on and going, okay, let's revisit this. Let's try a different way now is, you know, really significant. And that's what you do when you're in your mid to late 30s. Well, some people do, you know, compared to in your 20s, where I think, you know, you tend to be more, you know, you've got that energy that's pushing you forward, and now they're at a point where even in the middle of all this, you know, now would be the perfect time to say, let's not deal with this now.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me just kill them all. And, you know, and the fact that Sam in the middle of that can say, no, let's stop. Let's take stock now, not later.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Oh, it might be a little bit of a new era for the Winchesters, let's hope, anyway, for at least for a minute. Of course, they are still both keeping little bits of secrets from each other at the moment, and we'll find out. But, I mean, I had no problem with either of them, because I think Jared, what the hell is wrong with me today? Sam is not going to tell Dean that he's infected while he's wanting Dean to do his own mission, and because Dean would have just hightailed it back to him. And Dean doesn't really know what the hell's going on with the darkness. As we don't know, was that him remembering it and dribs and drabs, or, you know, it was not even really clear what was happening.
Yeah, she's projecting into his mind. How does that work?
Yeah, exactly. We're not sure when he was seeing that. Was that a memory? Was that happening then? Is that something that's going to happen? Were we only seeing it? Was he not remembering? Though he did have a kind of an I'm screwed face on at the end there. But, yeah. He's not sure what's going on. Sam doesn't want Dean to drop everything and run back to him. So I was actually cool with them not sort of spilling the beans on what was going on.
I mean, look, you know, I'm the first one to say I don't think honesty is always the best policy. I mean, there are reasons why you're going to be doing what you're doing and, you know, move ahead with it and deal with it later. That's different than saying, I'm not going to tell you because I think you can't deal with it, or I'm not going to tell you because I don't trust you. I'm not going to tell you because I'm trying to protect you. This is just, I've got to work with it. I'm doing what I'm doing, you're doing what you're doing. Now, I've no doubt there's going to be various points of conflict and that, but that's being people, and that's a very different motivation, I think, from what we've seen played out previously, and that's exciting. And so I do get I know it's been part of the sales pitch for this season about, oh, the boys are back, it's like season one. Well, they weren't fucking on the same page in season one, so
no,
that's
they
just
weren't.
Wrong. No. This is very different. These are, you know, I've said before, every season the boys have a point where they choose each other.
Yeah,
this we're starting off from that
choosing
point.
Them each other. Yeah, exactly.
And that's quite different. Usually they, you know, sort of come to that point of choosing each other in one way or another. But now we're starting off with that point, and they're choosing each other in a way, what they've been through in the last couple of seasons, knowing all the shit they've both put each other through, and Cass and that put Cass through, and how they've failed in various things that they've tried to do. They're going into that with their eyes open. So it's exciting. I think, you know, as I said before about a competence kick, a kink, this is like an emotional intelligence kink.
Yeah, it's really exciting. It's really exciting to see them in the first episode of the new season, as you say, choosing each other, which they did at the end of season 10, but they've reinforced that at the beginning of season 11, and also having the kind of conversation that they had right at the beginning of the season, not having to work up to it and work through all this crap and go through all this pain to get to this, you know, this is not right what we're doing, but actually straight from the get-go go, you know what, this is what we should be doing, let's move forward together in this way, trusting each other and treating each other, you know, with a bit of respect and going back to what we're doing, what we do well.
I always recommend, because, you know, for us it's been a long, long hiatus, go back and watch the season 10 finale and watch this episode immediately. They are a two-parter. It's going to be a three-parter, I presume.
Which I'm really excited about. I love it when they extend the story over more than one episode. I love that, you know, because I always wish every episode went for 2 hours.
But you have to go back, and I think you made a good point then, Amy, that, you know, what's said in this episode is building on what happened, you know, at the end of the last episode when they choose, or Dean chooses Sam. And I think you need that in your mind that makes this even more powerful, that that's what they're coming off, that, you know, really, really significant moment there. And
yeah, the, you know, very significant.
But also that, yeah, that's, you know, where that's going to take them then this season, I think is really exciting.
It is really exciting. It's really exciting. I'm super excited. I loved this season premiere. It was right up there with my favourites.
Yep.
I've watched it a bunch of times. It's beautifully shot. It looks filmic. The effects are gorgeous.
Lots of action. Like
lots of...
It was funny. Yeah. I saw some people saying they thought it was slow, but I was thinking, like, oh, I thought it was quite...
Me too.
Action-packed. And some surprises, like things like the fact that Mike, the baby's father, that he's self-aware that he's been infected and able to make a decision. Now, that's different, you know, than we've seen this sort of thing play out in the past where people just turn and they're not aware that that's happening. And that's both more...
And able to fight it then at the end, not attack them and to just to tell them what the baby's name was.
That both, you know, it gives it more pathos that, you know, he knew that and he sort of made that sacrifice. And so there was that lovely combination, I think, of new interpretations of these things, plus those echoes back, as we said, to Croatoan and even to the pilot of what we're thinking about being faced with the, you know, what do you do with someone who's possibly going to become a monster?
Yeah, exactly. But it's just a baby.
Yes.
Because, I mean, we even had that conversation way back in season 6 with the shifter baby, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a monster, it's just a baby, you know. Well, Sam's like, it's a monster, and Dean's like, well, it's just a baby, actually, at the moment.
Yes, you know? And things like with Alexis, Annie, Alexis, Sam, whatever her name is. Stupid Bob Ferrans.
I know.
And also with Kate, the werewolf.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, and many more, but and in Croatoan as well. But that idea of and with Dean as well. I mean, Dean having the mark of Cain, the idea was he had potential. And, you know, Sam, yeah. As I was reminiscing, one of my favourite moments in the near the end of season 10 was that speech Cass makes, which doesn't matter how long you can control it, it will get you eventually, and I'll be the one who has to watch you murder the world.
Yeah, because everybody else will be gone.
So, you know, it's a common theme that we don't know really if the things you're meant to hunt, at what point do the people become the things.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's, I would imagine, will be some issue with the baby unless it grows up into a puff of smoke by next week.
Maybe they can send the baby to Jodie. Jodie seems to look after all the supernaturally affected children.
Oh, it's the way with Jordan's Academy. So...
So and then she's got a cop mum, cop foster mum, can go and hang out with, you know, Sheriff Hanscom and Jodie and the girls.
We need to get Chrissy. Like that spin-off is just writing itself at the moment.
It is.
I hope Jenna survives. I think she's too. Although you know, look, the longevity of women who look after sort
monster
of
babies.
Monster babies, demon babies, is not good. So we can only hope. Oh, it just makes me think she had sort of dark hair and blue eyes like Damien.
I thought that's probably why the mother bled out and why Mike actually said, you'd think in this day and age they'd be able to stop such a thing.
Yes. Well, at least the mother wasn't a jackal.
Well, that's true. Thank goodness. Because ew.
That's always hard on Mother's Day.
just a bone, squeaky ball.
Any final thoughts?
Yay Show is back, which is so exciting. Like you said, you know, I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, I did a season 10 rewatch, then I did a Mark of Cain rewatch. I started like at the episode where Dean gets the Mark of Cain and watched it all the way through. So I watched season 10, did two rewatches of season 10 and one from halfway through season 9. But it's never the same as getting brand new, fresh Winchesters
every
week.
Yeah, new stories and, you know, new theories and it just feels really good to have them back.
It does. And we will be back after next week's episode, Form and Void, with a cocktail or two. Amy is down here in Melbourne for the Australian Movie and Comic Expo, and we get to see two Megs at once.
We do. We get to see the Megs. Yay!
So first time ever. In fact, I'm trying to think whether they've both been to Asylum together. Maybe. I'll have to look that up. Not sure. But Rachel Miner and Nikki Acox will be here next weekend down under, and that is very exciting. And we're both having photos, and we will post them on the internet because, oh, my God,
it's so exciting. Yeah,
it's very really exciting. So we will podcast before that, though, and after next week's episode because, it's all happening.
And
we haven't had many spoilers. Like, really, some of the pictures give you some idea of who's going to be around and that, but, shit happening. But we don't know anything more about the darkness from every spoiler we've read than we know from that first episode.
No, not at all. Like, and I really don't. Like, I mean, you know, I've seen the next week's promo. I've seen the CHCH, so the journalist promo, which actually was a lot more givey away.
It's more spoilery.
Yeah, a lot more givey away. But it made me kind of go, more than, but it still was, everything was still super mysterious.
Yes, yeah, no, we really don't know what's going to happen. I suppose my only concern at this point is, particularly given Sam's line of, it could be a while before I see you, is that I hope it isn't a while. I would really like Sam to catch a break this season.
Sam or Cass are we talking about?
Oh, sorry. Cass. Sorry.
Well, Sam as well. Sam needs to catch a break as well.
Sam needs to catch a break. I'm a bit Sam-centric at the moment. I'm going through a severe Sam phase. being sort of... I'm team free will, so I sort of vacillate between from moment to moment who I'm fixated on. It's Sam at the moment, because Sam,
he was pretty freaking magnificent in that episode, I've got to say.
He was. Yes, I hope we have team free will together. I hope, you know, Cass's storyline isn't, I hope he's got a role to play with the darkness that brings him back to the boys. So
I feel like he's going to.
Crowley's going to have a role because he's got the cage in his basement. God knows what Rowena's going to be up to, though.
We're probably not going to see her until episode 3. I don't think we're going to see her next week.
Didn't look like it, but, no.
Don't know, but my theory is we'll get through this stuff first. Get through all this stuff first and then trottle on down the road. But, I don't know. I don't know about Cass. I don't know. But I think he's obviously going to be somehow involved in the fight or the whatever against the darkness, you know, because, like you say, we don't actually know what it is. But, I would say, being an angel, he must be able to get some kind of intel somehow.
I'd hope so.
I would hope so.
That remains to be seen. Anyway, hopefully we'll find out very soon, and they don't hurt him too much.
Oh, yeah, I don't want him hurt too much. I
hope his eyes get better.
Oh, those eyes make me wince when I'm watching him. I, like, find that I'm kind of wincing and blinking a little bit because it just... looks, I know they're probably not, I'm sure Mish is fine, but they look bloody uncomfortable.
Oh, we should just mention, sorry, that just made me think, Misha released during the week the director's cut of the mockumentary.
Oh, my God.
That just made me think of it. It was when Jeremy Carver's referring to him as, you know, we send in the what we call the expendables. And I just thought, yeah, they probably just really poked Misha in the eye for real.
I thought to myself, if anybody actually saw this online and didn't know the cast, wouldn't they think Jared was the biggest dick ever? Like, if they actually thought that Jared is amazing at being a dick.
I still even I still saw a comment from one person who did actually think I think they understood it was in fun, but they did actually think it was a fan who won a competition who
got oh, to God.
A film. And I was like, yeah,
no. Oh my gosh. And gee whiz, there were some good gifts on Tumblr after that, I've got to tell you.
Yes, but we did get to see Mr. Ackles and Minnie Ackles in his sweatpants.
Yeah.
Not so Minnie Ackles.
And
Mission's Treasure Trail, which, like, this is what you have you done posted to that. Me. This is what you've done to me, fandom.
You posted that. I
saw you do that. Homosexuality 2015 here had to post immediately when Mrs. Treasure Trail appeared online. It's at 12 minutes and 42 seconds if you're looking for the treasure trail.
Seriously. I was like, ooh.
I could go and wash the heterosexuality off me afterwards.
Yeah. And I had to pull apart gifts.
We don't get
into much. Frames.
But there were some extra awesome bits. The whole bit with Mark Shepherd squatting.
Oh my God!
Getting thrown
Why
out.
Why wasn't that in the original? That was hilarious. Oh my gosh! That was so funny.
And more of Jensen sort of peeking around corners. More of Jared being an asshole.
Oh God, he's so good at that, man. He's so good at it. This is awesome. I'm going to go watch that now.
Oh, look, it's definitely a happy place. I don't know how many times I've watched it, but...
definitely a happy place. Yay, Supernatural, happy place.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll be back next week with more Women of Letters.
Talk to you then. Bye.
You've been listening to the Women of Letters podcast. If you'd like to contact us, our email is wolspn@gmail.com. You can follow Amy on Twitter @AmyInSydney and Jules @SuperWiki.